You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What's going on, everybody? I'm Bear Chris Flaka. Jeff Schwartz is with me, as well as Jeff Sherman from the Super Bowl. Welcome to Bear Bets Podcast. Masters Week is here, as you can probably tell by the hat on the head. I've been to Augusta many times and covered the event, and it is everything that you would want it to be. It's an unbelievable event, and I was fortunate enough to do it. And now we're fortunate enough to talk about it and wager on it. And we've got one of the best golf handicappers and odds makers out there in Jeff Sherman from the Superbook, as I had mentioned. And I guess we'll just start right off the top with Scotty being such a short favorite. Is this when you're setting the market on this, like, is it a combination of things? Whereas, okay, we have a ton of future liability at a bigger number than this, as well as we just don't want any more money. Is that, or is it basically on its form, like 4-1 or 450, like that's super short. So like what's the rationale in posting a number that short?
Well, we're actually in good position on them right now, but if we had longer odds, it would add up more quickly. So he's number one in ticket count and number one in money wagered. And so it helps spread everything out. It also helps lengthen the odds on the other golfers, but the public knows what his metrics are. And tee to green, he's blowing everybody away and he's in every tournament. And the thing we saw recently was he almost won three straight tournaments. And had he done that, you'd probably see him in the 7-2 range. But just doing that recently has everybody wanting to be involved with him. So you don't need to go too high, and they're willing to play him at 9-2. 5-1 would probably get bet pretty significantly right now.
How much do you change the odds for a tournament based off of the last couple of weeks of performance for golfers? Like, do you go into basically Monday or Sunday night and say with a blank slate, or do you sort of have the prices set and they don't move very much based off of how golfers finished the previous week?
Oh, it's very fluid, and it's not just how they do it the previous week. It's how they do the previous round. So we might see it at the Valero Texas Open how they're doing on Thursday, and that can affect next week's Masters odds. Somebody going out there and getting a first round lead. If you look at last week too, Sergio Garcia doing well on LIV and almost winning, that dropped his odds down from 300-1 down to the current 100-1 just because of what he did last week. So it really gets magnified the closer you get to a major. But we look at round by round, not just the entire tournament to adjust the odds.
Jeff hit on like recent tournaments, but we know the Masters is so historically based on like the course, it's the same course. There are subtle changes every year, and just how a player performs there probably does factor in greatly. And we all know the whole Fuzzy Zeller is 79. No debutant has won since then. You got two guys in Oberg and Wyndham Clark, who's a major champion. This is their Masters debut, and they are players that I think people think can contend. Like, do you inflate the price a little bit on those guys because of the fact that it's been so long since a debutant won, or does that really not come into play? It's more based on, hey, these two players are really good. We don't care about the historical factor and the fact that they've never played a round in the Masters.
No, it plays a small part into it because the way that both of them are playing, if they had some course experience under their belt, 1 or 2 years even, I think they'd be in the 25-1 range, maybe slightly less. But right now you can find them 30-35-1 just because we are getting support for them. But at the same time, we're willing to take that support because it is so tough for a debutant to win.
Is this the year that Rory does it? Is he back to being a major winner? Would you put your money on Rory for the Masters?
I wouldn't myself. I've seen too many things that, he'll put together a Sunday charge when he's not in contention. but I wouldn't support him myself, especially at 12-1. I would probably need over 15-1 to consider it.
Yeah, I'm with you, Jeff. If you look at the last 5 years, two missed cuts, and the other three times he did make the cut, he was outside the top 20. So he hasn't contended entering the weekend in a long, long time. And I remember when I was covering this event right after Rory had won the Open in 2014 at Liverpool, when he was okay. Now he just needs the Masters to complete the career Grand Slam. And I went back and looked, and the guys who went on to complete the career Grand Slam, none of them needed more than three tries to get that final major to complete the slam. So like history tells you that if you don't do it quickly, you're not going to do it. And it's a laundry list of guys with three that never did get that four. So I'm with you. I'm out on Rory, and I'm out on a guy like Victor Hovland, who's kind of scuffed right now. I know a lot of people are on him. And then in terms of winning the event, I'm out on a guy like Xander Schauffele, who, again, top 20 matchups, love him. But I'm not betting Xander Schauffele to win the Masters and do something that he's had an opportunity to done so many times and hasn't done. Like, are there any guys that you're kind of have that mentality that you're like completely out on?
Well, I agree with you with Xander, because I've been like that for a while, where it's hard for me to bet him to win. But all the other markets, top 5, 10, 20 matchups, that's where you need to zero in on. And you just see it. And it was the same thing with Patrick Cantlay. Now, he's faded out to 40-1, but he was very similar. And, you know, I always used Cantlay and Xander in matchups together because they were very similar to me. So
that's not nice.
Well, I try to use that mentality about, you know, both guys somewhat failing together of not getting the W. But Xander's definitely one that comes to mind, and Rory too. I mean, you mentioned Rory, and what we've seen out of him, even if he's gotten off to some blazing starts, he puts one round out there that takes him out of contention. But then he does that Sunday charge we're used to seeing to finish fifth and make his statistics look better than they might be. So it's tough. And you know, that's why you see Scheffler such an overwhelming favorite, because he finishes a job and he doesn't falter too much. Once in a while, the putter does, but he can still even overcome that and win.
We've talked about the different markets, right? There's the overall winner, top 5, 10, 20, 30, 40. There's head-to-head. Is there a favorite market that you think is the sharpest, is the best way to make money in the Masters?
Well, it's been increasingly popular, is the top 20. It gives you that leeway to find somebody like Xander that doesn't have to win. And we're seeing a lot. That's what I tend to lean to. And, you know, one guy, for instance, that I played top 20 this week is Russell Henley. I'm really high on him in the 60-80-1 range, but not so confident about winning the tournament. So I played him in some matchups in top 20. So I look for more top 20s than I do outrights these days.
I have a Henley top 20 I took today. Yes. Wow. I'm on the right track. There we go.
I played Xander top 20. I played Jordan Spieth top 20. I know that'll be a roller coaster ride throughout the 4 days. Hope if he makes the cut. And I played two guys. I played Will Zalatoris top 20. I played Cam Smith top 20. I know Cam had a withdrawal in Miami last week because of the food poisoning, but the prices drifted up. It reflected that. And he's played well at Augusta. Didn't necessarily play well there last year, but he's done well enough there. And of course, Zalatoris had a withdrawal because of his back injury last year. But two times he played there, he's got a runner up in his sixth. And yes, his putting has not been great the last couple of tournaments, but he played really, really well over a three tournament stretch where he nearly won out west, and then played well. I think it was at Bay Hill as well. So he's a guy I think a lot of people would love to win their first major this week. Is there someone from the group of players that has not won a major? I think we just kind of crossed Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay off that list. Is there a player that hasn't won a major yet that you would make the most likely to do it this week at Augusta?
I'd have to put Joaquin Neiman in that category. And I did play him at 60 and 50, and right now you can find him about 30. But he's played so well on LIV, winning a few times there, winning a DP Tour to help vault him into the Masters and get him his ticket punched there, the invite. He's just playing well enough and with enough confidence that I think he can break through. And I expect him to be in the mix. And, you know, he's shown that he can finish. So, you know, I'm hopeful that he can be the one this week.
I got to ask you the Tiger Woods question. I love your tweet. It's like the top, you know, the top odds, 9-1, 10-1, 30-1, 40-1. And then the very bottom, Tiger Woods, 150-1. I think that was your initial number there. Do you play him at all to make a cut, to not make a cut? I wouldn't put any money on him to win at all. What's your outlook for Tiger?
No, I don't usually get involved with him because he's got the one competitive round under his belt this season. I don't think that's enough to have confidence in. And every time he tees it up right now, we see sharp play against him. We've seen it again this week where we open the cut, no minus 135, yes, plus 115. We're out to no minus 150. His first round at 74.5, we've seen overplay on that. One of the matchups I did play was Phil Mickelson, minus 120 against Tiger. I haven't seen enough out of him, and he didn't have any recent prep coming up to this as far as competitiveness goes, you know, playing in a tournament, even if he missed the cut, but at least getting a couple rounds under his belt. So just the one round at Riviera, it's not enough to go on, and I can respect the anti-Tiger sentiment out there.
Did you set a number on the cut, like plus three, plus four, anything like that? Did you set one?
Yeah, 147.5, three and a half over.
Yeah, it's right there. Like there's a part of me that like says he's played there enough that he can go out there and go 73, 74 and make it pretty much on the number. But then you hear it and you see about just how he's still struggling to walk. And people who have not been to Augusta and have not seen the course and walked the course, until you are there and do it, I don't think you can appreciate how hilly and steep and how difficult of a walk it is. So I'm with you. Like I would love to see him make the cut, but I think it's going to be difficult. A couple more to before we get you out of here. The weather is always a factor in betting. At least I always like to try and figure out which wave of golfer is going to get the better end of the weather. And it looks like potentially the guys who go out a little bit later on Thursday and a little bit earlier on Friday might get a little bit better of the weather, because it looks like early Thursday is supposed to be some very heavy rain. And maybe that winds up meaning that they just push the tee times back and you just wind up playing more golf in a shorter period of time. Does the weather forecast, does that affect anything in terms of your outright market, like in manipulating that and trying to figure out what a better price, does that move the needle in terms of round score or anything you do?
It does in the head-to-head matchup markets for the tournament. Now, from what we've seen, it looks like they can have thunderstorms in the morning on Thursday, which could push play back. And I actually think that the early late might have an advantage because the guys that are going out early might get pushed back and the round will be in the afternoon Thursday and they can complete it. And then Friday, the late golfers might have to play all those holes and play more than 18 on Friday. And Tiger actually has a late tee time. So he might have to play in his first and second round on Friday, more than 18 holes, which will hurt his chances actually of making the cut to me. So we definitely look at things like that, price it in. And if you can find the difference in tee times with two golfers, we do adjust prices on that.
What's your biggest liability heading into the round one? And maybe how do you adjust your prices throughout the tournament because of it?
Well, right now, our largest liability is Tiger.
Of course.
He always is. Shocking. But from realistic contenders, it's been Xander and Matsuyama. So we're a little bit shorter than the market on those two golfers to try to write money elsewhere. But like you mentioned, through the adjusted odds and through the in-play odds, you know, it gives us the opportunity to bump other golfers up and kind of reduce that liability. But we're trying to increase other golfers right now. I just went 50-1 on Justin Thomas. Not used to seeing someone like him at those prices, but we're just trying to spread it out and reduce the liability that we have out there. And I know we won't be able to overcome the liability on Tiger. That's always there, and it's always going to be there.
Rumor has it that you're on JT's bag this week, Jeff.
Yeah. Oh, I am? Oh, he needs the help.
Both of you.
Both of you. I'd walk the course, you know. If someone was paying me to do so,
it's a great walk. It's a great walk, and it's if you get an opportunity, even just to get there once for a practice round, it's certainly worth doing. So, Jeff Sherman, follow him on Twitter at Golf Odds. One of the best there is out there in terms of setting the markets. He's a scouser like I am, and we're a little down after giving away a couple of points at Old Trafford this past weekend. But as I said to our fellow friend Mr. Murray, if Arsenal can go to Wolves and get all 3 points, if they can go to Spurs and get all 3 points, they can go to United and get all 3 points, and then beat Chelsea at home. I guess they deserve it, right?
Yeah, the first thing I'm sweating out is the Arsenal Bayern game right now. So,
yeah, I was going to say that Arsenal started out quickly, and Bayern actually came back and took it was funny. I was joking with someone the other day. I said, with how poor Bayern's doing in the Bundesliga, watch them wind up winning the Champions League this year with like the worst team they had and a coach that they hate. So, the beauty of sports, right?
Yeah, definitely.
All right, Jeff, on that, we're going to let you go. Mr. Schwartz,
thank you.
You stay with me for our friends in the gambling group chat. Jeff, have a great week.
All right, thanks, guys.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Appreciate Jeff Sherman for joining us and from the Superbook and offering all of his picks and information and knowledge and who's being played, who's being favored. And all the different things that went into him sending the market out there at the Superbook. Now, of course, the gambling group chat time comes. Jeff and I are joined by Sammy P and Will Hill. So we heard all of our Masters stuff earlier in the show. Sammy and Will, you guys have any Masters thoughts? I guess Sammy, we'll start with you because you win the Best Dressed Award of the day.
Well, only because I'm at work and have to go back to work. I do have to return the suit too, Bear, after this, in case you're wondering.
It's like the junior prom in high school. You have like the $85 tux rental that needs to be returned by 11 a.m. the next morning.
Yes, it's exactly like that. Yes. My favorite bet for Masters is Chris Kirk to be top 20 in the tournament. Look, I don't play a lot of future stuff. Those are mostly dart throws in terms of just winning the tournament outright. How many times have we picked a guy to win? He finishes second or fourth or ninth. So I want to take the range and go top 20. You can find him 7-2, top 20. I have a nice position there. And then if you go up a little bit, top 10, you can find him 10-1. I like him at this course. He's battled his demons over the years, but he's always been in the conversation at Augusta. I think that's a very good bet. And this is going to be a little bit square. But if you want to get creative here with Scotty Scheffler, he's minus $2 to be top 10. Do you want to pick the Celtics to win the NBA title? Do you want to pick a team like the Avalanche to win the Stanley Cup? Like a Scheffler top 10 Avalanche Stanley Cup is 11-1. Yeah. I don't think it's the worst idea in the world, because Scheffler's probably going to be in the mix to be top 10. And then I pulled up just for clarification, a Scheffler top 10 and a Celtics NBA title is plus 340. You could do a lot of things down the road if Scheffler finishes top 10.
So you're probably looking at, if you were looking at the Nuggets as well, with Scheffler and the Nuggets, if you're looking Nuggets, Celtics Scheffler at plus 340, you're probably going to be getting around 6-1 then probably on Nuggets Scheffler now.
11-2. I just popped it in. Nuggets and Scheffler top 10 is 545. So round it up to 11-2.
For creativity. It's so funny that you mentioned that. Because last night I sat around on the couch when the game was finishing up, and then even after the game, punching in a bunch of cross-board parlays with some Masters players and some NBA title and Stanley Cup. So I love doing those things. I've hit a couple of really, really nice ones. I've come very close to hitting a couple more nice ones. So hopefully, I'll put it to you this way. If I can get one of my Masters guys home this week, I'm live to a pretty good amount to Iga for Swiatek to win the French, and then the either Liverpool or City to win the Prem, and then either the Celtics, the Nuggets, or the Clippers to win the NBA title. So let's hope
the Clippers. Wow, the Clippers bear. That's a bold choice there, buddy.
No, this was early. This was before they kind of went on their like run.
The Clippers.
They're not playing well now, for sure. But
they got a bunch of winners on that team, though, Bear. You know?
Hey, at least Kawhi's won.
Yeah,
no Bear. One else has, but anyway, I kind of hijacked the train of thought there. So, Will, before I take it too far off the rails, I liked Sammy's thought about trying to get the best possible value you can get on Scheffler, where he doesn't necessarily have to win. Do you have any Masters plays in pocket or anything that you liked?
Well, I really liked Sammy's bet, and I really like how he's dressed too. I'm sure the dead guy he stole that sport card off doesn't mind somewhere in a funeral home. But look, no, I think with the Masters, it's important course history, guys that have played there before. I think Fuzzy Zeller is the only guy to win there his first time. So you want somebody who's played there, experienced, played well there. Finau has three top 10 finishes. Tony Finau, 40-1, not a bad number. I actually took a shot. I don't think it's going to win, but sometimes you just bet numbers and you hope for the best. Sergio Garcia, 175-1 at Circa. You're looking at recent form. He almost won last week on LIV, lost in a playoff. He's won at the Masters before, won there in 2017. Again, do I think this is like some bet I expect to win? No, but at 175-1, you don't have to put very much on it to at least, get some entertainment. And maybe he's around the leaderboard Saturday, Sunday, and you can wiggle around and play somebody else and lock in a profit. So that's one I thought was at least interesting, Bear.
That's interesting because he actually is involved in one of the props one of the matchups that I like. He's only minus 120 against Tom Kim. And again, Sergio has missed a bunch of cuts here in recent years since he finally broke through and won. But the fact he seems to be playing well on the LIV Tour right now against Tom Kim, who really has been kind of wrestling with some injuries and some other kinks in his game. He's a guy who came in really highly thought of last year and it hasn't because he played so well internationally. In the competitions and really didn't translate last year. Did play kind of well at the Masters. I think he was top 20 last year, but Sergio minus 120 over Tom Kim was actually one of the matchups that I did like. So I guess if we want to just move on from
one last thing, I just want to get your thoughts on it more than anything. It's going to be a popular one, so maybe we should cover it. Tiger to make the cut, missed the cut, right around even money. He's got to beat, I think, 39 golfers to get there. Can he get there? Can he make the cut? What's the right side there?
I can't do it anymore. I used to just put some money on Tiger every year for this, for fun. And I'm not making any Tiger wagers this year, guys. I just can't do it. Can he walk for 36 holes on this course? I mean, like a legitimate fair question, right? Like
Then take the miss. I thought about taking the miss.
He's at a point of his career where the injuries are mounting. I'm just gonna stay away from it. I don't want him. I want him to make the cut.
Right.
I don't like rooting against my fan interest sometimes when it comes to wagering. So I would say no.
Did you see the matchup? Tiger against Phil. Phil's minus 130.
Phil's the bet there, right?
Yeah. Phil was runner up, co-runner up last year. That was one of the big stories of last year. How everyone kind of underestimated all the LIV guys. But yeah, we talked about that earlier in the show as well about Tiger. I would normally say yes, he can make the cut because he can just kind of manage his way around it. But just knowing that course, because you really only have to beat there are about 25 people who are in this field, 20 people in the field that have no shot of making the cut, whether they're past champions or the amateurs coming in internationally. So you really only have to beat about 15, 20 guys to make the cut. But the fact that he openly admits that he's struggling to walk, I don't know. If I had to bet it, I would say yes, but it's a stay away. It's one of those things where you don't have to bet everything that they throw up there. But if you said go bet it, you have to bet it. I would say that yes, he does manage to work 73-73 and make the cut right around the number. Moving on from the Masters, which we covered a bunch of it earlier as well, with some of our picks there before, and we'll have a couple more later in best bets. I guess a quick reaction to the NCAA tournament, which just ended. I mean, UConn just ripped through everyone, 12-0 the last couple of years, 12-0 against the number. In whole, I guess it wasn't really a great tournament. I mean, the number of great games that we saw, I mean, the A&M Houston game obviously was wild. Colorado Marquette, Colorado Florida, Yale Auburn. I mean, was a good game, but it just didn't feel like a super memorable NCAA tournament, despite there being a historic performance by UConn. Jeff, what's like your grand takeaway of this tournament, whether it's from a treetop or a betting standpoint?
Well, I wonder how much of this tournament will affect the way we gamble on next tournament, right? We saw a lot of big dogs cover for the first half and then eventually fade in the second half, right? We even saw it with Alabama in the Final Four, where they were, you know, early on, they were up, they were shooting 71% and ended up not covering the full game. And I wonder if that's going to affect the way we wager next year. We see these big dogs against some of the powerhouses, the same thing will happen. Do we just take the first half and sit on that wager and hope it cashes, because a lot of the games we saw this year were close early and then blow out late. So like, Will, are you going to change the way you wager next year based off what we saw this year?
Probably not. I just think this was a one-off. Now, maybe if you want to look deeper and say, hey, these the NIL has taken an effect here. These mid-majors lose their best players. I think this year was different too, because, you know, we had talked about it during conference tournament week. A lot of the one seeds in the one bid leagues got knocked off, which watered down the 13, 14, 15 seeds. So no, I mean, still it's one tournament. It's still a relatively small sample size. It was kind of a boring tournament. I mean, we had that moment that Friday, early evening, late afternoon, where the Yale Auburn upset, that crazy finish was almost simultaneous with Colorado and Florida, which was a near buzzer beater. Those happened within like 30 seconds, a minute of each other. That felt like the tournament. All right, upsets, buzzer beaters, the tournament's here. But it quickly turned into the round of 32 where it was all chalk. The Final Four was kind of ho-hum. Title game was ho-hum. Just a lot of favorites winning, a lot of favorites covering. What UConn did is just incredible. I mean, think about this time last year. They were down at the half to Iona, and Hurley had never won a tournament game for UConn. It was their first round, and then they kill Iona, and they just bury everyone ever since. It's amazing how quickly things change. So to answer your question, Bear, Sammy, I don't know if you guys feel any different, but I'm not going to go in next year and just wager differently based on this year. It's just kind of a one-off, I think.
Yeah, it's such a small sample size. What is it, 18 days, 19 right. days? Yeah. I think it's tough to overreact. Let me speak to UConn for just a second. Final Four and the national title game, wise guys laid it early, and then the squares just cleaned up late. I mean, look at the championship line. It opened 5 offshore, and that lasted, you know, 35 seconds, goes to 5.5, goes to 6, goes to 6.5, goes to 7. And then there were people that were texting me, and I'm sure you guys get these texts too. Hey, UConn's a layup -7, right? ? And you're like, everything fundamentally about that is bad habit. Like, you can't be laying 7 when the game opened 5. But this is what happens when you have these historical teams, these 09 Carolina teams, these, you know, 2023 and 2024 UConn teams, the 2018 Villanova team. Sometimes one of the greatest teams of all time will bail people out. And that's what happened. I mean, look, you can't sit there and tell me UConn -7 was a great bet. It won, but you missed the opener by 2 whole points. But again, sometimes a good team or a great team will bail you out. And I think Will said it before we started taping. You knew at half, you knew when Purdue weathered a couple of storms, had that tip back dunk, and they're still down 6 with Edie having a million points, you knew UConn was going to cover and probably cover the second half. But then you're getting all those same texts like, UConn's a lock in the second half, right? You're like, ah, like, this is not supposed to be this easy. But so, UConn made it that easy, and they have covered 12 straight NCAA tournament games. We'll never see that again, ever.
This is why live wagering can be a way to wager on these games. Because I'm with you, Sammy. I didn't lay the 7 with Connecticut. I thought that was a bad number by the time I really decided to wager on the game. I got 3.5 in the first half. Like, Purdue went up by 3, I think, 26-23. I saw 3.5. I grabbed it immediately. Like, so I think this is another example where live wagering can help you. Now, obviously, if UConn had rolled from early on, I wouldn't have got that number. Just would have, you know, stayed away from the game. But the 3.5 popped up, and I gladly took it because, to your point, 7 at that point was not worth wagering on.
Mark Lawrence had a couple of numbers out there just to kind of show like Sammy, you were talking about like Square Central and just the people who are just hopping in late. Like favorites is six or more in the tournament. We're 31-6 straight up and 25-12 against the number. That's 68%, 67, 68% against the number. Favorites is 6 or more points. It's and only 6 outright losers. Number one seeds that didn't play another number one seed. 14-2 straight up, 13-3 against the number. You just couldn't make these numbers big enough. And the betting public, I'm curious to, I probably should have asked Jeff Sherman about this. Maybe I can catch up with John Murray later, just offline. Like, how did they do in the tournament, like overall? Because it seems like I'm sure they won and the books are going to be fine. But it seems like this is probably not one of their better tournaments. I mean, they got away with a lot of future liability for sure. But it seems like on a game to game basis, they probably didn't fare as well as they probably would have hoped.
Well, you have to remember when we get to March Madness, there's a lot of foot traffic in Vegas, and a lot of those guys go in there with money to parlay favorites together. So it's hard to get an exact number when you blanket the whole country when we start weaving in DraftKings and FanDuel and all that. But there are guys going into Vegas, like I want to say, was this the Sweet 16 when 14 or 15 of the teams all won outright?
Yeah.
And I think it was on that Saturday. We talked about this on the show. One of the guys that I talked to was like, yeah, this is easy. I just parlayed 7 favorites together and they all won. Now, it's not to say everybody does that, but it's a weird calculation because you get sharp guys come in and bet 5 dimes on a dog plus 10. But then you get all these money line parlays that roll up with the favorite, you know, that so it's very interesting calculus in the tournament because you have so many games throughout the course of a day and you might go into a day needing the dog, but then the liabilities from the parlays build up. And if all 6 or 7 favorites win in a day, you may have in the morning been like, all right, we need the dog or the favorite, but now we need the dog because we need the team to lose. So it's an interesting calculation, and it all depends on who's taking what bets at what shops.
Well, the biggest upset of the tournament, at least in the first round, was Oakland knocking off Kentucky in one of the 3-14 games. And Kentucky now at 2 of the last 3 years been knocked out by a 14 and a 15 seed. And now John Calipari is moving on to Arkansas, which was kind of a little bit of a shock. I think it's probably best for both sides. I think the toxic, it was a very tight, I can't talk today, but it was a very toxic atmosphere, I think, between Kentucky, the fan base, and Coach Cal after that loss. It may have kind of run its course there. He won a national title there, but lately it has not gone, for all the players that he's put in the pros, that it has not translated to NCAA postseason success. So now he's going to go to Arkansas, and they're going to be very excited, and he's going to have a ton of NIL money there to bring in whoever the heck he wants, and maybe it will work at Arkansas. Certainly he'll have a little bit of a leash, but now you're left kind of standing Kentucky, where I think they're probably kind of happy that now maybe they're not on the hook for the 30 mil or whatever it is that they owe him. If you look at kind of who's next for Kentucky and you look at the candidates, you can scratch Dan Hurley off. Dan Hurley's not going to Kentucky. It's not happening. That's a terrible bet. But would Billy Donovan leave the Bulls to go back to college in the NIL world? Who knows? Mark Pope is really highly thought of at BYU, plays a fun brand of basketball. I think he's someone who probably would get a call. And then Rick Pitino and his son, I think, could probably cross both those names off the list. By the process of elimination, does that make Scott Drew the favorite? A good bet in your mind, Will?
Yeah, look, there's not that home run candidate because you're looking to check two boxes. People bring up Rick Pitino. People bring up Jay Wright. I don't think Jay Wright's coaching again. I think Patino's too old. Do you want your next Calipari? You say what you want about this tenure. You could say, hey, it was disappointing. It certainly was at the end, but he did win a national title. But Calipari gave you 15 years where you're pretty much always a contender, won a title. You're looking for the next Calipari. When they hired Calipari, it was, hey, this guy's going to be a home run. He's going to bring in the NBA talent. There's not that guy where you could check both boxes where you know he's going to win. He's accomplished enough. Like, you're not going to hire somebody's assistant or a mid-major guy. You want the accomplishment, but you want somebody who's young enough where you can have him for the next 10 or 15 years. You don't want a short-term hire like a Pitino or Jay Wright. I think Scott Drew checks both those boxes where he won a title. He's had some good years since. He's young enough. Again, is it this like slam dunk? Oh my God, we got Scott Drew. Let's start planning parades. No, but I do think it's the best balance of young enough, accomplished enough. I mean, when you break it to cut right to it, there's not that great, like, hey, this is a home run. There's not, I don't know. I mean, people would have said Dusty May this time a year ago. He obviously had a disappointing year and he went to, you know, he moved on and took another job. So I would go by Drew. I don't want to say by default because that's a little, you know, it diminishes what he's accomplished. But I don't know, Sammy, do you have a better idea? Like if I put you in charge of hiring this coach for Kentucky, like who would be your first call?
First call is Danny Hurley and he says no.
Yes.
And then, yeah. I would try to pry Nate Oates away from Alabama, but the problem with that, this is not like, you know, we're building a roster in Madden with trades turned off, you know, like you have to pay buyouts and massive buyouts to get a guy like Nate Oates out of that contract at Alabama. I don't know, man. Like, I don't know that this is the job that everybody perceives it to be. When was the last time Kentucky won a national championship? 2012. So it's been, you know, 12 years. And that year was sort of an anomaly because he had Anthony Davis, the pterodactyl, literally guarding the entire paint in one fell swoop. I mean, that was a very good young team, but like that model doesn't really work anymore. And, you know, after Oakland beat Kentucky, I think Jay Wright was very strong on it, whether it was CBS or True TV or TNT or whatever. He said, this model doesn't work anymore in NIL yeah. because these young players, while they might have higher ceilings in the pros, they're just not ready to win these games against 21, 22, and 23-year-old men in the tournament. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. I would go for Oates. I would probably pay it. I mean, I don't have the money, so I guess I don't really know that I can speak from that. But I did see this, Bear. This is funny. Matt Jones, Kentucky Sports Radio, he tweeted out the odds for next year. And he said, Kentucky is the 9th favorite without a coach or a roster. And as somebody who just went down the Kentucky plunge, I advise you do not bet them at 25-1 or 20-1 at one book to win the whole thing.
And how is Duke the favorite? I don't.
It's just shot in the dark. It's just they're just throwing darts, Bear. That's all it is.
Does that create some opportunity? Like, again, I would not want to be betting into this market right now because you have no idea
right.
who's going to be playing where. It does create an opportunity if you have a little bit of like lunch money and you want to throw a dart on some of these longer shots. Like maybe now is the time where the prices are out of whack because I'm certainly not betting Duke at 9, 10-1, Kansas at 12-1 or whatever. Like there certainly are other possibilities out there. So yeah, we'll see what happens. I don't know about Scott. I kind of agree with you, Sammy. Like, I don't know if they're going to get the kind of coach that they expect to get. Like would Scott Drew like check that box? I don't know. Like Scott Drew kind of feels like central casting for Waco and Baylor and that community and everything in around. Like it kind of feels like he's like made for that Baylor job. And would it work at Kentucky? I don't know. So,
well, here's the thing, guys, right? Like Kentucky has to decide what they want their program to be, right? I'm glad Sammy mentioned the thing Jay Wright said, right? About the older players sort of becoming your championship roster. Does Kentucky want to be a school that goes the one and done route, which clearly recently has not translated to a lot of success around the country and winning championships? Or do they want a coach that can bring in, again, some five stars, but maybe not all five stars, and can grow these players into staying or even using the portal to get them to come in as older players and have a roster that's different than what Calipari had, but a roster that's more conducive now to winning? So the program has to decide what they want, right, in the coach and in the program to build championships. Because if they hire a coach who's just going to recruit the five stars, it's good. Talent is important. I'm not saying it's not important, but then how do you get those guys to stay and how do you get them to all play for 3 or 4 years together to end up winning a championship?
Two more quick points, Bear.
Go.
Nobody in the Commonwealth has a better job than Mark Stoops, who goes 7-6 every year.
Correct.
No pressure. I mean, 73-65 in 11 years, and he is as safe as can be in Lexington. As for next year, you know, UConn was 20-1 after the tournament last year. Gonzaga brings back four starters, and you can find them 30-1. EK is back. Ben Gregg is back. The backcourt with Nembhard and Hickman is back. Mark Few is going to bring in good recruits and probably a transfer or two. I don't think Gonzaga at 30-1 is the worst bet right now in the middle of April.
We'll take that under advisement. Yeah. It's funny because I was actually kicking around, like, would Mark Few be someone maybe that he's reached a point where it's like, okay, in this new era of college basketball, have I kind of maxed out what I can do with Gonzaga? He's gotten to the title game. But he's 61 years old too. It's not like he's not the 48-year-old young up and comer anymore now. Would he be willing to take a shot at age 61? Like, oh, in the back of my mind, like, I always wonder what if I had the resource, but I don't think that's a possibility. So moving on to pro basketball, which is something that we haven't talked about much on the Bear Bets Pod and the Gambling Group chat. The NBA, but the playoffs are coming rapidly. They are upon us. Award season is upon us, and I'm not necessarily interested in who's going to win the title because I think everyone basically Nuggets or Clippers. I think not Nuggets or Clippers. Nuggets or Celtics. Different seed, different conference. I think Nuggets Celtics is probably what everybody's kind of focusing on, but like these awards markets, they just seem like the sixth man of the year were with Malik Monk being out now, he's favored. Naz Reid's the second choice. Like it seems like there might be an opportunity there for Reid at plus money. Do you think, Will?
Probably be the way I would go. I just think Monk is right on that edge of he missing just enough time where, like, I think this was his award to lose. He was going to win this award if he stayed healthy, but he got hurt like, what, 10 games to go? Or I don't know, that'll probably cost him enough votes where Reid is in the mix and Reid could steal this award. Now you go back and forth and you're like, all right, Reid started too many games. He's not eligible. This is a confusing award, sort of like comeback player of the year in NFL. This is one of those awards where there can be different interpretations among the voters. And we've seen voters in the last 24 hours not know who plays on certain teams that go to the playoffs. So keep that in mind. But I would certainly agree with Reid at plus money. Wouldn't feel great about it because I never know what these guys are thinking, but I would certainly go with Reid. I know you're on the Wembanyama Defensive Player of the Year campaign. Yeah. Somebody, if they were running for office and they said, hey, I can get Wembanyama to be Defensive Player of the Year, you'd vote for him no matter what the rest of their politics were. So I'm kind of with you there.
Dude, the price makes no sense.
I agree.
We get it. The Timberwolves are a great defensive team. They got Anderson and Reid and Conley and other guys around. Like, as a team, they are the best defensive team. Yes, we get it. But it's not best defensive team. This was the same thing last year with the Celtics. But I don't even think they gave it to the best guy on the Celtics. But, like, if you look at Wembanyama, he's got 332 blocks and steals on the year and playing 29.6 minutes a game. Gobert has got 196 blocks and steals playing 34 minutes a game.
Man,
defensive rebounding percentage. Wembanyama 27.5. Gobert 25. Like, there are no individual numbers that support Gobert winning the award. The only thing, the two things support Gobert winning the award. The Timberwolves are a better team. And the idiot voter block out there, like the baseball writers in the Hall of Fame, like, oh, no one deserves to go in on the first ballot. Oh, he's a rookie. No one should be unanimous to the Hall of Fame. It's that idiotic mentality. Finally, we've seen, whether it's been Brian Windhorst or whether it's been Draymond Green, come out and be like, Wembanyama is the defensive player of the year. So there's still about a week left, I guess, for voters to maybe change their mind. But everything that Wembanyama does every night, it's every night. It's 14 rebounds and 6 blocks. It's insane what he's doing. And I just wish this 1985 voter block mentality of, oh, their team is better, so clearly it's got to go to him, would change. So, Sammy, I'm off my soapbox. The floor is yours on anything NBA related, whether it's a awards, title, conference. Take your pick.
I love the soapbox, for the record, and I've been seeing you chirp, 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 and I love it. I also love when you start making a case for something and we can all watch Jeff, like, looking up the bet, like, to make the bet. It's one of my favorite pastimes on the show. Like, one of us starts going, and you just see Jeff, like, trying to...
Oh, I was doing that exact thing. I'm looking
at... I know, we all know what you were doing. But just to that point on Wembanyama, and I should have brought this up earlier with the Masters, especially when you get to these guys down the board, like Batia, who just won the Valero. Mm-hmm. Batia to win the Masters is anywhere from like 80 to 120 to 1. That's a huge range on the outright market. It's not as big in the award market, but if you're looking, if you're so inclined to bet Wembanyama right now to win Defensive Player of the Year, 8 to 1 at Caesars, 850 at MGM, 10 to 1 at DraftKings, 12 to 1 at FanDuel. It's the same freaking bet. Yet some of you, and you know who you are, you only have one account because, well, I don't need all these accounts. And if you're going to make that bet, you can't be betting 8 to 1 when there's a 12 to 1 in the market. Period. Just please get the best number, whatever you're betting, whether it be a future market, a spread market, an award market, whatever it is. There are so many. I mean, some of these states have like 8 outs now.
Yeah.
And if you're only playing with one, you are limiting your ability to win.
I was looking at Masters odds, and even for that, like top 10 odds, some books are plus 200, others are plus 140 for the same person. And like, you have to find the best of it. Even if you don't want to put a lot of money in your accounts, you need to have accounts for all of them because the odds change per account.
Will, we were talking about this offline. I'm going to let you bring it up. Like, you had, I think, probably what is the, I mean, we were talking about like setting in, I think it was a conversation you were having with a friend of yours and you passed it along. Like, if you were setting an over under on like number of losses for the Celtics in the Eastern Conference playoffs, like 5.5 potentially would be a number, but you actually like made a point, like, is betting the Celtics to win the Eastern Conference, just like, is that the best postseason bet you can potentially make?
I don't see who knocks them off. I know it's like the NBA and we're coming off. It's usually a sport that's very chalky. We're coming off a year last year where the Heat, I mean, I think they got into all of our pockets, you and I especially, Bear, with series after series with the Bucks and then the Celtics. But I'm willing to do it again, or at least I just lay the chalk with the Celtics, because look at their neighborhood. The Bucks are a mess every night. They lose to teams that are, you know, 14, 15 point underdogs, just ridiculous. Spreads where you look at that, oh, they'll beat the Raptors, oh, they'll beat the Grizzlies, and they lose to all of these teams. They're a complete tire fire, and I don't see that being fixed in the playoffs. The Knicks maybe could have given them a series if they were healthy, but Randall's hurt. Ananobi's in and out of the lineup. You might have a path here. Okay, maybe Embiid comes back and gives you a series, but when Embiid's healthy, they never beat Boston. You might have a path where it's like the Pacers in round one, the Magic in round two. The Magic could be the two or the three seed, and then whoever in the conference finals, I don't know, the Bucks, the Knicks, whoever scrapes by. I don't know that anyone takes them to a seventh or maybe even a sixth game. And, you know, the 140, you're tying up money and it doesn't look, it's not sexy. You're not going to blow up on Twitter because you gave out Celtics to win the Eastern Conference. It's not that, you know, long shot that everyone wants to see, but I don't know. That feels like a pretty safe bet. Sammy, you're in that area. You tell me who keeps the Celtics out of the finals in June?
The Celtics. That's right. It. The Celtics or the injury bug. I would say that would be it. I still don't like how many threes they shoot late in games, but I mean, you're basically pulling at straws to find a team that's actually superior to them in a seven game series. You know, there just isn't that team. And I know exactly what you're saying. You're not going to get your flowers for saying minus 140 on Boston, but if those guys stay healthy, man, if Tatum and Brown and Porzingis and Drew Holiday and Derek White are all healthy, that is maybe the most talented team in the league. Now, I don't know about a layup to win the finals, because the finals are no walk in the park, but to win the East, I mean, if it's not this year, when is it going to be with these guys? This is the super team in the East right now, in a hobbled East with a bunch of bad teams. And if Jeff Schwartz was coaching the Bucks, I might like them more than Doc Rivers. You know what I'm saying? Like, Doc just doesn't.
I definitely would.
He doesn't move my playoff meter. So right. To answer the conversation, it's the Celtics. The Celtics are the only team, it feels like, they could stop the Celtics.
I think Doc Rivers does move the meter in the meter.
He does.
Just not in the direction that you actually want him to move.
The wrong direction. The fade direction. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is good for the bettors. One other little subject before we, let you go. Obviously, last week has been brutal for for pitchers in Major League Baseball. I had a nice Cy Young bet on Shane Bieber. Thank you. He's now gone. Yuri Perez from the Marlins hurt. Spencer Strider hurt. Framber Valdez. Now, like there are pitchers. This is as many injuries as I can see or remember from starting pitchers this early in the year. So we can have the doctor, why is this happening type conversation and what do we do to fix it? That's probably a little bit above our brain power and our pay grade. But as handicappers and as people who like betting in, who like betting into these awards markets, like how do you approach like betting Cy Young awards now or other posts, but more Cy Young than anything else, being that you have a real, real big potential for injuries. Like, is it something that you want to avoid completely? Do you want to just bet good pitchers like in an inning by inning or a game by game type basis? This team, pitcher to throw a shutout inning, which obviously takes a lot more involvement and an active way of doing things. You have to be really into it and not really have anything else going on in your life to do that. Or you look just looking to like stay away from it or even just kind of limit yourself to making smaller bets at bigger numbers. Will, what are your thoughts on handling the Cy Young market now with so many big names apparently out of it?
Yeah, and not just so many big names out of it. I mean, you look up, it's April 9th, 10th. I mean, it's not like it's June or July. We're a week or two into the season. And I mean, every time you look, Josiah Gray was just scratched. Framber Valdez was scratched. Mm-hmm. I mean, every time you look up, you can't even keep up with them. I can't bet Cy Young unless I'm getting, I don't know where my cutoff point is. Again, everything, there's no like strict line, but unless it's 30-1, 40-1, 100-1, like I'm not going to bet a guy 8-1, 10-1. First of all, you got to pitch 90-95% of the season just to have a chance. And then you got to pitch well enough to win the award. There's a lot of moving parts where unless I'm getting a long number, I'm probably going to wait till June or July. Remember Snell last year was 150-1 middle of the summer, right around like the NBA draft. So I don't have an appetite like what you did when you bet Bieber. That's a sickening feeling. You don't even get a sweat out of it. I mean, you want to cash the ticket, but at the very least, you want to be able to sweat it all summer. So to me, unless I'm getting a long shot, I don't know, Sammy or Jeff, if you feel differently, but I'm not jumping in on anything too quickly unless I feel like, wow, that's a really long number at a huge price. Otherwise, I'm just going to wait here.
Yeah, there's not much of an appetite for me because like, you guys were just talking about when you name a guy down the board with good odds, like Garrett Crochet, for example, who's been dealing for the White Sox, he's coming off an elbow injury. So like, you know, there's always the concern that, you know, the guy that you spot could get hurt. It's a cop out of an answer, but let me just double down on what I said last week. This White Sox team is pathetic. And when we did the show last week, they were plus 340 to be the worst team in the league. They have 16 runs in 9 games. 9. They can't hit. They can't run. They can't throw. The manager is a moron. The number now on the White Sox to be the worst team in the league is plus 230. It has dropped a dollar in 6 days. That's where we're at. I know the A's are bad, and I know the Rockies are bad. But 16 runs in 9 games, and now Robert is out for months, and Eloy's going to get hurt again when he eventually comes back. They can't score. If you can't score, you can't win 60 games.
So the AAA affiliate for the White Sox is in Charlotte. Should I just avoid the games this year, Sammy? It's like, does it trickle down effect? Should I just avoid all baseball for White Sox, top to bottom?
No, I saw that like Charlotte has 40 runs in like 4 games or something like that. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me. Their minor league team in 4 games has 50 runs, and they have 16 in 9 games. That's how bad it is.
Minor league games are awesome, by the way. I love going.
Oh, dude, our stadium in Charlotte, not to brag, is fantastic. I will definitely go. It's a lot of fun. But nonetheless, I look in these markets, just personally for me, I don't wager MVP Cy Young for most leagues until like the middle of the season anyways. I just feel like there's so much that happens the first month or two of every season or 3 months that I'm not getting personally anything out of wagering before the season. It's like Pat Mahomes for MVP. Just have that in my pocket. But otherwise, I kind of just wait and see how the season going. And yeah, you might not get that big number, but you might cash your ticket easier. So I just wait until the end, some point in the middle of the season, most of the time, to make these wagers. Well, to echo your initial point on taking a number, I did play Jordan Hicks at 100-1 to win NL Cy Young. Again, can he stay healthy? Who knows? But 100-1, I'm willing to take a chance. And I did play Sammy. I played Schroeder from the other Chicago team, NL Cy Young. I got him at 45-1.
He's good.
I think it was him. Two guys, longer price. If I win, I win. If I lose, so be it. And the race to the bottom is going to be very interesting because you mentioned the White Sox, you mentioned the A's, you mentioned the Triple A's in Oakland, the Rock Pile. The Marlins a couple of days ago were 35-1 to be the worst team and have the most losses in the league. And I think they're now 25-1. Marlins are sneaky up because you talk about a team that has no healthy arms. It's them. And they already got rid of their – the Marlins could be really, really bad. And you look at last year, I know, Will, you and I were really big on the under in the Marlins last year, and they won all those one-run games. And they kind of lucked out a little bit into a lot of those with some of the, and it seems like the bill is coming due this year. So I know we got Marlins under 70.5. We feel really good about that. And we'll see maybe if the Marlins at 35-1 can come through and beat these other terrible, terrible teams.
And the A's are not that bad, man. They're not as bad as people think. The bottom was last year for them. I mean, they're bad, but they're not rock bottom. Rock bottom was last year for the A's.
Let me ask Jeff this before we go. And Sammy, I agree with you. Between Geloff and some of the guys, Miller closing, like they have some guys, but like morale of a player. You're a baseball player.
Yeah.
Knowing you're moving to Sacramento or wherever the hell you're going now in the debacle of an ownership group, you come out there on your homestand and there's literally 2,000 people in the stands at Oakland Alameda County Coliseum. Like, what are you thinking as a player when you get onto the field and you look up at that?
The first thought I had when I saw the announcement they were playing Sacramento was they're never going to get free agents to sign there. They don't get them anyways. It's not like a big difference from what they normally do. But the fact is you're just not going to get anyone to ever sign with you. And every player is going to leave immediately the first chance they have. So, you know, if you have someone homegrown that you like and you want to keep, you just won't. Like, they're going to leave immediately. Now, you might trade that guy before you get that opportunity. But the fact is you're just not going to have a team together until you move to Vegas. And players want to stay on your team. And, guys, Vegas is 2028. There's a chance that they get an expansion team before the A's move there. You know, like, there's no guarantee, in my opinion, the A's end up in Vegas. I mean, they might be stuck in Sacramento. I don't know. Oakland again. It's a really terrible situation for anyone with that franchise. And they have like a loyal fan base, same as the Raiders did. Yeah. And they're just stabbing them right in the heart with all these moves.
Yeah, no, it really is sad because you think of the early 70s when Finley and all the great players that they had and the Batch brothers. And I know Brad Gilbert is a massive A's fan. I wonder though, if it does maybe something to file away, maybe you don't want to hop in right away and do with it. Maybe file away. Maybe it's worth playing the A's when they're on the road. And they're going to be a bit of a bigger dog, but they'll actually be more engaged and more excited and more apt to go out and play well. So that was good. We covered college basketball. We covered baseball. We covered NBA. We covered golf. That's the model right there, men. So let's we covered junior high school prom, tuxedo rental, and the sharpest dressed man in the room, Sammy P. So, Let's do it again soon. Appreciate you guys. Have a great weekend betting the Masters and whatever else you guys are betting.
Another wonderful Gambling Group Chat there, Bear. Hopefully Sammy can return his suit in one piece. We covered a lot there, man, and a lot of sports that I didn't think we'd get to. We covered them all, but we're here for our best bets, and our best bets will be related to the Masters. What is your best bet for the Masters tournament?
Before I get to the best bet, just to piggyback a couple of things that I had in the arsenal for the gambling group chat and for the conversation with Jeff that I was unable to get to.
we mentioned Justin Thomas and extending his odds out to 50-1. If you go back and look at JT, outside of the Fall Masters in 2020, he's only broken par once in the first round. So he's not a guy typically who gets off to a good start at Augusta. So you might want to take a look at that if you'd see a round score or a matchup for the first round. Max Homa is a guy that I would be looking to fade. He's someone I people love, and he's great for the sport, and he's affable out there in social media.
Yeah.
But if you look at his 12 rounds at Augusta, 9 of the 12 are over par. So he's not a guy, again, that typically is played well there, and we'll see maybe one day he will, but until he does it, he's someone that I'm looking to fade. I mentioned the top 20s, the three outrights that I have are Cam Smith, Wells Zalatoris, and Jordan Spieth. 45-1 on Cam. I have 55-1 on Zalatoris, and he's now 40, and 25-1 on Spieth. I mentioned the Sergio Tom Kim matchup, which I liked. For my best bet, I'm gonna look at Wells Zalatoris. I'm gonna back him at plus 138 against Victor Hovland. Hovland is someone who I think he's kind of searching for his game right now. Last year, his swing was impeccable, but he's kind of tinkering with things right now, change swing coaches, and he has not recaptured the form that he did last year when he was playing so well. I'm banking on Zalatoris getting the bad round out of his way in those last couple of tournaments, and I think we're going to see that Willie Z that we saw in February in that three tournament stretch where he was completely on fire. And I think coming back to Augusta a year after the back surgery and not being able to playing a practice round with Tiger Woods, I think he's going to be in a good mindset. So I think Willie Z plus 138 against Victor Hovland is certainly worth the play. A lot of pluses in the matchups that I saw. You can also get it was funny how Jeff was mentioning how he has Schauffele and Cantley matched up. I mean, there's actually a Willie Z Cantley head-to-head out there as well, and you can get Zalatoris plus 115 against Cantley as well. It's another one that you might want to take a look at.
Sammy mocked me for trying to find wagers during the show, and I absolutely do that, Bear. When Jeff was talking earlier, I did try to find that Phil Mickelson-Tiger Woods one. I couldn't find it. Maybe they'll post it
again later. It's out there.
It's a good wager. I'm with them on where that, again, just Tiger. I'm a huge Tiger guy, and we all are, but I think, trying to fade him in this spot, especially in that situation, could be a good one. The one guy we haven't talked about at all in this is Brooks Koepka. Top 10 finish, plus 190, Bear, plus 2,000, 20-1 that I saw earlier today to win it all. Is he the forgotten guy in this? I mean, he's got five majors, obviously. He's playing good golf right now, finished second last year in the Masters. We haven't talked about him at all this whole time. He's not my best bet. But I feel like he's kind of flying under the radar here as far as guys that we expect to win this.
I think he is, because I almost wonder if there's been a little bit of a last year, like we totally forgot about all of the live guys.
Yeah.
And then he went out and played an unbelievable 54 holes before he wound up finishing runner-up.
Yeah.
Or co-runner-up with Phil. And I think he changed his putting stroke to like a broomstick putter. But if I recall reading that, I don't watch the Live Tour, so I can't say I've seen it. But I do remember reading that he's kind of changed his putting. But he's someone who, I mean, he's very confident in himself.
Yeah,
he said like previous couple of years he wasn't hurt. He wasn't healthy. He was hurt.
Yeah,
and because he was hurt, that's one of the reasons why he moved to the Live Tour, because it was a lighter schedule. He knew he was going to have exemptions to play in these majors, and he went out and did it. And his iron play and his ability to drive the ball is up there with anyone. So I certainly would not be opposed to adding a Brooks Koepka bet to my portfolio as well. I agree.
I feel like some of these documentaries that we see on athletes sometimes can be a lot of like smoke blowing and not much to gain from it, but Full Swing, when I covered Koepka, like there's a lot to gain from, to your point about the mental part of the rehab and just getting healthy again. And we saw obviously with Well, I thought the Wyndham Clark stuff was good, just mentally. Again, it's where he's at as a golfer. Obviously, this was filmed last year, not into this year, but he continues to play good golf. My best bet will be Shoffley as a top 10, plus 140, seven straight top 20 finishes in majors. He's the third most birdies in Eagles in Augusta the last 5 years. He's playing good golf now. As we mentioned earlier, Bear, not to win the tournament, though, right? I see a top 10 finish. I did not wager on him to win the tournament, but plus 140, the official top 10, he's playing good golf. He's played well at Augusta. An important part of wagering in this tournament is finding those guys that play well there, that have played well there. So I'll take him here to finish in the top 10.
You know, I like that play. It's funny. You could even, if you want to be like a total sadistic, you could go like Xander, like 36 hole leader on Friday when they post those odds. Oh. Or like first round leader, like they do now. Like my buddy we were texting last night there, and he's like, I'm playing Xander first round leader, and then Xander top 20, like just like total, like knowing what was coming.
Yeah,
so, you can get creative with a lot of these things, and you had to mention Wyndham Clark and just having him at 53-1 a couple of weeks ago, when he missed that putt on 18, it was just. It was just brutal. So that was a
he's my Oregon Duck
to get over when Scotty came back and won the Players. I had Clark at 53-1, and again, Sheffield, he went out and played great.
Yeah.
So nothing you can do about it. But you're right. Those Netflix, the not only the Full Swing one, but the Breakpoint one, the tennis one was really good as well. So yeah, you're in a mood for like a Netflix binge. Those they're certainly they offer you a look, and sometimes it's good to see as like a better and a handicapper. Like you get so wound up and aggravated, yeah. Player is up two breaks in a set and wind up losing the set, losing the match, or and you learn about the things that might have been going on in their life off the court that kind of creep into their mind. And the same thing with golf too, like injuries. That happen and things that might be going on in the midst of the round that you're not aware of. And it kind of grounds you a little bit and brings it back down to earth and makes you realize, we're betting money on these people, but it should not be a reason to have angst towards anyone. No. We should certainly just kind of appreciate what they do and understand that they're humans just like you and I.
And in these sports documentary, these series about sort of the individual players, right? Unlike the NFL, when it's the Hard Knocks, it's the whole team, you get more insight. Like the players are talking about themselves and you're getting behind the scenes about the way they play, where the other sports is just a sort of a propaganda for the team, right, Bear? These, when you talk about individual, you know, tennis players, golf players, even F1 to an extent, you got more about the mental part of the kind of the game planning and how these players go into preparing. So I like them. I watch them all, man. I watch all the football ones too, by the way. I am a sucker for any sort of sports doc, sports miniseries. I love them all, man.
Yeah, no, they are. And you learn so much as well. And for those of us who love the game, we never played it, you get an opportunity to really see what's going on. So, well, we went into a lot there. I did not expect the Netflix doc to go in there, but I got plenty that don't relate about sports. If you want to talk about that from time to time, but hey, good one today, my man. That was
we got a lot done. Fun.
Jeff was great. Our first first odds maker on the show to kind of Sammy can set our numbers, but in terms of guy out one of the established books, it was great to have Jeff on to kind of go through the motions. The group chat, we covered a ton, and hopefully we got a bunch of winners and a bunch of good information out there. We'll be back soon. We're gonna have a little NFL draft stuff to talk about potentially.
We've got the
Kentucky Derby to talk about. We'll have a little UFL chatter later in the week as well before the games this weekend. So appreciate Jeff Sherman. Appreciate you, Jeff Schwartz, as well.
They appreciate it.
Appreciate Sammy P. I appreciate Will, and I appreciate everyone out there who downloads our pod wherever they get it, whether it's on Apple, Spotify, wherever you might do it. You subscribe to the Bear Bets YouTube channel, so you can see my nice Masters hat, Jeff's nice golf shirt, and appreciate all the interaction that we get on Twitter. So for everyone involved, I'm Bear, and always remember, the less you bet, the more you lose when you win.